What up, Canes fans? Before we get started, just wanted to talk to you guys about the Tank Brewery real quick. The Tank is located in the heart of Miami in Dade County at 5100 Northwest 72nd Avenue. This place is awesome. I've been there. The beer is outstanding. The food is great. Whether you're watching the Canes game, the Heat game there with your buddies, you're having a guys' night out, or you're having a date night with the missus, it's a great place to hang out. So you can order online at thetankbrewingtakeout.com or call them at 786-801-1554 for delivery or pickup. And here's the thing. If you use the promo code TANK4SUP, you will get free delivery on game days. And so that is TANK4SUP, the number four. Not spell it out, but TANK4SUP. So go check out our friends at the Tank Brewing. They've been great to us. So take it away, Jordan.
All right. Also, we want you guys to check out our guy, Stickers by AB. That's at STICKERZ by AB. You know, I've been ordering a bunch of stuff from him. You know, we have a collaboration sticker that has our logo on it. So make sure you're checking him out. Give him a follow on Twitter. He's just a good dude, and he's helping us design our merch. So yeah, man, it's make sure you're supporting the good people that help us out here on Fours Up.
You're listening to the Fours Up podcast with your host Marsh.
What up, what up, what up, Canes fans? It is the Fours Up podcast, and it is a victory Saturday for our Miami Hurricanes. It's your boy Marsh, no Jordan today, but I am joined by boss man Cam Underwood from the State of the U. What's going on, brother?
Yo, man, just hanging out. You know, just watched this win and everything, and saw your text message, so got a little time, so I said, you know what, hey, let's hop on the microphone and chop it up.
Sweet, sweet, sweet. Okay, so the Canes win 31-19. It wasn't pretty. I mean, it wasn't a clean victory. Had a lot of mistakes. Derek King, I think, struggled a little bit today. But let's hear your initial reactions to Miami's win.
Yeah, man. I mean, it was clear that there were some struggles. But even with struggling, we put up 31 points and Derek King passed for 4 touchdowns. You know, so like, was it perfect and flawless football? Was it the 73 points that Clemson hung on Georgia Tech today with pretty much no incompletions or no negative plays? No, it wasn't that. But, you know, this was a team that I wrote about and everybody said, you know, has struggled to bounce back from losses in big situations over the course of a lot of years. And so if you want to take a step towards being good and having great or elite beyond the horizon in the intermediate future, not just way, you know, light years away. If you want to make a case for good, pushing towards better than good, then you win this game. And they found a way to do that. It wasn't pretty, but, you know, Manny Diaz said after the game that through 5 games, this team does not have any questions about effort or mentality. And I can see that. The performance and production can get better, but they did not give up. They persevered. They survived and advanced, and we're 4-1 moving on to Virginia next week.
And what I thought was interesting was, I mean, last year, for part of the game today, it kind of had the feeling of Georgia Tech last year for some reason, just because we kept shooting ourselves in the foot and, you know, giving up penalties. And every time Pitt would score, kick a field goal, things like that, Miami would you know, they would answer. And so I thought, unlike last year, of course. So I thought that was a big step in the right direction. Offensively, we were without Brevin Jordan today. Derek King goes for 222 yards, 4 touchdowns. He also threw 2 picks. And that second interception he threw, that was, I don't know. What were your thoughts on that? That was bad.
He said it was, but you know, he said it after the game, Derek King himself. He said that player is not supposed to be there in the coverage that they called and what they ran. But he guessed and abandoned his actual responsibility that I was going to throw the ball there. Or, you know, there could be a play made where he made the play. But he's not supposed to be there. and he ended up, you know, breaking a tendency and was there. So, you know, credit to Pittsburgh, you know, for a guy who studied some film and thought, hey, you know, this could be the chance that I have to be there and make a play. You know, and it's good for them that he did make that play, you know, because that kept Miami from converting. But, I mean, we saw the legend himself, the chief of staff, Edward Reed, do that in the NFL, where he played, you know, the famous story that both he and Peyton Manning told, where Ed Reed played a specific coverage wrong for two seasons to put it on film for the third season later when they were going to eventually play against Indianapolis. And then they dial up something to beat that scheme. And then he finally spins around and makes that play. I mean, obviously Ed Reed is the better version of what we saw, but I mean, hey, yeah, that guy from Pitt broke a tendency and made a play. Good for them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess. And I do want to make a point. So you had me running the State of the U Twitter today, which was a blast, by the way. Thank you for that.
Hey, man, no problem.
A lot
you
of people.
The account. You can hop in there every now and then, bro. Like,
yeah, hey, I'm all right. I got it.
I mean, maybe not every game because there might be too many people in there. But I mean, like, if you feel like tweeting something every now and then, like we've talked about that. Go ahead, bro.
Yeah, I forgot. Okay, so I do want to make a point though. So while I was running, you know, that Twitter, a lot of people were upset with the offensive production, and at times, you know, rightfully so. You know, there was a few mistakes. The offensive line, you know, they played, and we could. we couldn't run the ball at all. But the thing is, I went into this game, and I think a lot of Canes fans were going into this game knowing that Pitt, you know, they have the number two rush defense in the country. They lead the country in sacks by a wide margin. They were like seven sacks ahead of the number two team. And did you see it playing out the way you kind of predicted it would, that we had to fight for those scores? I mean, most of our touchdowns were wide open plays. Actually, I think all four of them were. But did you kind of see us struggling a little bit against this defense?
Yeah, I mean, I did, because they ran the scheme that they've run since Narduzzi's been there. They got a decent, or good, I'll say, defensive line. You know, so they're going to let those guys get up the field. You know what I mean? And they're going to create havoc there. They're going to hopefully have their linebackers run free. And they're going to play man coverage, and they're going to try to make you beat them, you know, on one-on-ones on the outside. But what they're going to start by doing, the foundation, is crash to the run. They're not going to let you find space in the running game. And that's what they did. And, you know, in the instances where Miami scored these touchdowns, they found a way to scheme somebody open, whether it's Derek King with the fake QB read or QB draw, and then pulls it back, and then he hits, not Brevin Jordan, the other one, Will Mallory, your boy, wide open yep. down the middle of the field for the final touchdown. Or, you know, they run a post wheel with Mike Harley, and then he's open on the sideline on the wheel component of that, butt naked wide open, doing backflips and cartwheels. It just, all of the touchdowns were the counterpunch, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But to have the counterpunch work, you have to do your regular punches. You have to do your regular offense. So, like, we're going to run this inside zone read. We're going to run all these things because we have to do that to set up the special, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they also, I mean, Miami did try to run some special things. They tried that reverse to Jalen Knighton, you know, early on. I think that was the second quarter or third quarter. You know, they toss it to the running back. I think it was Cam Harris running to his right. But you have Jalen Knighton as a wide receiver on the sideline. He's busting it back the other way and gets the pitch for the reverse. So they tried some different things. It just didn't really work. But they did what they could do to, hope you know, affect the defense. And then Rhett Lashley was able to go into the bag of tricks and dial up the one thing that was the perfect counter to what they had shown, and it got us in the end zone four different times.
Absolutely. And that's something that, you know, that our offensive coordinators haven't had in years past, with that, you know, that's that play call at the right time. It was a lot of give and take today for the offense. But here's some stats. So 331 total yards for Miami. Pitt came into the game giving up like 263 per game and 18 yeah. points a game. So, you know, 31 points for the Hurricanes, over 300 yards of offense. I'll take it. I mean, Pitt's defensive line statistically is better than Clemson's, and it's a very well-coached defense. You know, they had like second stringers and you know, young players stepping up and making plays. I want to ask you this question before our second guest is begging me to get him on, but I want to ask your opinion on this because Jordan and I have gone kind of back and forth. I want to talk about the offensive line because today, you know, they struggled. You know, King went down a lot. Some of those sacks were partly his fault, but, you know, the offensive line definitely had their struggles today. How would you – how do I want to phrase this? Are you happy so far this season with the offensive line, and do you think they're progressing up to, you know, your standards and your predictions for this season?
Progressing up to my standards, no.
Okay.
Better – But even with, you know, playing pretty poorly these last 2 weeks, they're better than they were last year, you know. And, I mean, you're giving up 10 sacks in the opener to Florida, like, with all due respect to a good team with talent on their roster. There's no reason on God's green earth that Florida should have had 10 sacks. And I think that this year, this offensive line would not give up 10 sacks. So, against that one team. So, I think that there has been movement, but I think it's been from, like, atrocious to bad. But they're still like mediocre, a little bit above average, and good and great, like levels to go in front of where we are. So, I mean, there has been some improvement. You cannot say that there's not been any, but it's been inconsistent. We're still plagued with penalties. You know, last week was Jakai Clark with all the penalties. This week, John Campbell had a couple. You know, so it's, again, not been perfect, but there's been moderate improvement. But again, you're going from absolutely atrocious to simply bad. And for this year, I think that realistically, that's about the ceiling, you know, and we're going to continue to have to train these guys and develop these guys to being better executors, operators at their positions, and throw numbers at the problem in recruiting by getting additional guys and not additional guys who are 2-3-4 year projects down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Guys who can play year one or year two on offensive line. And those are tough to come by. You know, like, one of the comparisons I always say is Danny Isadora from Cypress Bay High School in Weston. He ended his career as a second team all ACC offensive lineman, guy who got drafted in the sixth or seventh round of the NFL draft. But he didn't play a meaningful snap until year four as a redshirt junior. You know, it took time. It takes time to get these guys. And, I mean, he was a three-star recruit, but you're going to have to find a way to get some transfers or get some, you know, real improvement from the guys on the roster. And, I mean, Marcus Tate from U School or wherever he's playing football down here now says that he's locked in with Clemson. Cool. Who's another guy? Who's another guy? Because we're going to need to get some additional talent in the world of recruiting to push these guys and hopefully improve that situation. So, I mean – there has been, like, and the thing about saying that there's been improvement, think back to how abjectly terrible that unit was last year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, last year,
but it's been a little bit better.
Yeah.
So I will say improvement, but not the kind or amount or degree of improvement that you or I or anybody would really want.
All right. Okay. So we now welcome on, I got two of my favorite people on the call right now. We got Jay and Cam is still with us. So Jay, initial reactions from Miami's 31-19 win today.
Before I say that, how much have I missed? Have you already gotten into anything?
We talked
vibes in the group right now.
We talked a little bit about the offense, but that's about it.
All right, my first initial thoughts is my birthday is coming up Friday. I appreciate Manny Diaz and I appreciate Bubba Bolden getting me a win to start my birthday week. For that, I'm happy.
All right.
Get into the rest after that, so I'm just happy to get a win right now.
Okay.
Because if we wouldn't have got one, bro, somebody would have got shot. So, I'm good with that.
Jay, quit playing. First of all, you ain't even like that. And second of all, this weekend or next weekend against Virginia, which is a nighttime kick, so it gives you extra time to go around and, you know, beat debaucherous in South Florida. So you're welcome for that too.
I'll take what I can get, bro.
Are you, Jay, are you coming down for the game next week for your birthday?
I haven't made no plans for the weekend yet. That's always on my list every weekend coming up. So
absolutely.
I'll probably end up down there. I just ain't made no plans yet.
All right. Okay, so let's talk more about this game. We just talked about the offensive line, which had its problems today.
So Cam, I
wanted to add on to the point right before we called Jay. How much does it factor in that in the back-to-back weeks that we've really struggled on the O-line and in rushing, it's been against, you know, arguably two of the top defensive lines in the country? Because I feel like in the first 3 weeks, the offensive line played, they exceeded my expectations at least. They weren't perfect, but, you know, they were fine. How much do you think the last 2 weeks factor into, our opinions of them?
I think the level of competition is clearly part of the discussion. I mean, had this been done against teams that had far inferior talent to Clemson and Pittsburgh, especially in terms of the defensive line, that'd be one thing. I mean, it's not great, but I mean, if you're also looking at this schedule, these are the two best defensive lines that we're going to face. So, I mean, yeah, that's part of it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just a huge fan of Coach Justice. I really like the way that some of the O linemen are coming together. No Jared Williams today though at right tackle. So that was kind of interesting to see. I wanted to ask next about the receivers. Will Mallory, 2 touchdowns in replace for Brevin Jordan. And boys, I won't lie to you. When I heard Brevin was out, I got really scared. That was before I heard Pickett was out, though, because Brevin catches it what seems like 80% of our passes. But Mallory stepped up big, 2 touchdowns. Mike Harley had a touchdown. Mark Pope caught 5 passes. Jay, I'll ask you, and then Cam, I'll ask you. How would you grade the wide receivers today?
I'm not seeing that much of a difference, to be honest. I mean, I was glad to see some of the younger dudes in there. And for me personally, when it comes to the receivers, I've never been on this, you know, throw a dude away. He's a senior, he's a junior, whatever. He's not good enough. Get him out of there. Let's start over. That's not the way I'm looking at it. The way I'm looking at it is, based on what we do have, your certain skill set can only help us in specific spots. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we got the two short guys outside. Their skill set just can't help us there. So when I see bigger bodies on the bench, even though they're young, I'm willing to take that chance. So when I see the other teams in the country, the top teams, when they're willing to throw a freshman out there because he has a big body or because he has the speed or whatever they need. I think I heard Pitt's leading receiver right now is a freshman. You know what I'm saying? He has the speed, so they have to use that. And that's what I want to see from us moving forward. I was glad to see more of a rotation today. I'm not going to give them a grade. I mean, we got the win, like I said. I'm happy we got the win. Still look shaky in some spots, but I'll take it for now.
I mean, their receiver who's the leading receiver for them, who's a freshman, that's Buddy who hit us for 8 for 147 today. Oof. Jordan, yeah. Addison. Like, I mean, it's not just like, oh, in a vacuum, like, oh, this guy. Blah, blah, blah. Like, no, he did capital N numbers. And that's on 13 targets, too. So 18.5 a catch on 13 targets for 147. So you're even at like 11 yards a target almost for this kid every time that we threw him that they threw him the ball. And nobody else had more than 40 yards receiving. So he literally had half of their passing or their receiving offense.
If that's us, he's not on the field,
but. And that's what I'm saying. So, I mean, I hear you with that. Yeah, okay, I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. So if you're upperclassmen, like, get off of the roster. But just like to your point, you said it very well. You need to put people in positions where they can have a bonus or a benefit to this offense. Yeah. And that's what I want to see. And that's what I'm talking about. Michael Redden III and Keyshawn Smith. And, you know, these guys, okay, yeah, Keyshawn dropped that ball or whatever. People want to say,
that was pass interference.
People want to say pass interference. I don't care.
Yeah.
Give me the ball.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, like, nah, like, no. You can keep the flag because I still need you to make that play. Because what happens if they don't call that? They didn't call it, and now you're going back there. I don't care. Don't cry about it. Don't talk about it. Be about it. Give me the ball through the contact, through all that. If you're a baller, you do that.
You ball.
And your guy, your best friend, AR2 Amon Richard, he would tell me if I'm lying of when he played football, that's a catch.
Oh, hell.
Am I lying?
Dude, that App State catch he had over the shoulder.
Hello?
As a freshman.
I don't care. As a true freshman, straight out of high school, give me that. Get off of me. You can't check me. It doesn't matter. Keep the flag. That's what I'm talking about. But if you have guys and you put them in positions to be successful, you can have that. And they're trying so hard. to get these guys going at receiver. Yeah. You can see by the, you know, by the concepts they run and everything, they're trying so hard to get Mark Pope going or get D. Wiggins or get Mike Harley. And look, he had that great play on that post wheel for the touchdown and everything where he's butt naked doing backflips and cartwheels. You know, I get it. I get it. I get it. But, like, why are we working so hard to try to get a little bit from this guy or these guys when we could rotate the rotation and it might make our lives easier by putting other guys in those positions? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just –
what's the worst that can happen? Like they drop the passes?
Oh, go ahead then.
The only reason – this is my other thing that I've noticed this past week. I think by now everybody's pretty sure on what we have. We saw it against the top team, and then we saw it against another good team, even though they had a quarterback. What I'm seeing right now is a lack of continuity. So I was saying this on Twitter the other day. Might have been yesterday, actually. When I'm watching these receivers and I'm doing my fan complaints from the couch on the Twitter phone, I feel like I know what we have better than our staff because our staff changes every year or two. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I feel like they had no choice but to say, okay, here's our upperclassman. He's doing the drills right. I have to put him in. You have no choice but to do that.
Right.
So I already knew what was going to happen in the game. But if this is year two, maybe, I already know what I'm going to get from Pope. Or they know. I already knew. I knew what I was going to get from Pope and Harley. I knew what I was going to get from Wiggins. So right. I'm already starting off my first three games before I get to Clemson finding out answers instead of going into Clemson and Pitt with still question marks. Because it's a little bit late to start trying everything. I mean, we ain't got a choice now, but like we're still trying stuff that we could have had answers for already. That same catch you're talking about maybe is a different play if this ain't the first time he really getting his feet wet. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, yeah, and I mean, he got his feet wet in the scrimmages and everything, but I mean, yeah. It's, last it's week, one a little I was bit. Thinking about.
Against who?
Exactly. But guys who are probably not on the roster anymore or who are, you know, handing out water like the water boy. And I just watched that movie the other day, which is why I bring up that comparison. But, I mean, I was just thinking that on the drive home from where I was watching the game and everything about the lack of continuity, especially at wide receivers coach. You know, Field has been here. Hickson's been here. You wanted to change the offensive line coach, so hopefully, you know, another mango season is going to help them. But in terms of wide receiver coach, yeah. But I mean, we need these guys to step up, or you know, make that signal to go to the bullpen and bring out one or two or three of these freshmen, because you know. Every time that they got a chance, even if it was in a controlled environment, in scrimmages and practices, every time that they got a chance through fall camp, they were making plays.
Right.
So why, if you're controlling the environment to give them a specific opportunity, then you need to work during games to present them with those opportunities, because they've proven, given this opportunity, given this look, given this chance, they can perform. And then have that be the seed from which the tree of their career grows.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm saying. It should have been in the first three games that we was doing that, bro.
Yeah, I just
I'm sorry to cut you off, no, Marsh, you're good. But like if you look back, they actually gave some guys a couple snaps. But the thing is, if you're just out there lining up when we're gonna run the ball, you're not really giving them the experience. Yeah, yeah. So I know people are gonna look back at the stat sheets. They're gonna look back at, you know. And you can find these things on the internet. You can find them on the Hurricanes website. You can go through the, you know, the full statistical thing and be like, well, Keyshawn Smith played 5 snaps in the opener. What did he do? Did he run a route? Did they target him? Was it in a position or a situation of even intermediate leverage? Like a thing where like it was a snap that mattered into the story of the game? Or was it a thing where it's just like, okay, we're going to run the ball. And, you know, we're having a guy on the outside run 9 routes to run off the corner on that side. So go to a couple of those, but we're not going to throw you the ball. All snaps are not equal. And what they do with them are not equal. So I hear you that, yeah, we maybe could. And, hey, fine. If we didn't do it early, let's at least then give a little credit to the staff for doing it now.
Definitely.
Because,
yeah.
Again, the snaps that they've gotten against Clemson and Pittsburgh have been very impactful, even though we, you know, lost one game and then won another one and didn't look great. Those snaps are far more impactful to their performance and development than any snaps in the first three games would have been, because, you know, we ran the ball all day in the opener, and then we blew out two terrible teams after that.
It's definitely time to at least see more of Keyshawn Smith. That dude can play, and put him out there more, and I think he's going to get more comfortable, you know, where he can make those deep catches over the shoulder and things like that. Last question about the receiver. Did Jeremiah Payton play today?
Yeah, he was targeted a couple times.
Okay. Where has he been?
His shoe came off, right? That was him?
Yeah, that was him.
Oh, right.
Okay. And there was another couple that he was targeted on as well.
Where has he been? I know he was out for a game or two because of COVID, but I mean, coming into the season, people were expecting big numbers from him. And I was expecting big numbers from guys like D. Wiggins, so Mike Harley, so a lot of us are striking out on our predictions. But what are your Cam, I wanted to ask you before we head over to the defense. Quick thoughts about Jeremiah Payton. Does he need a few years? Are people overhyping him? What do you think?
I mean, he's a rubber meat road kind of a guy. He was targeted 3 times today. They were all incompletions, so he did not record an official statistic in the receiving game and everything. But, you know, I think that some of what he could do has fallen by the wayside because of what I spoke about earlier, because of the offense and the offensive staff pushing so very hard to try to scheme up something for Mark Pope and or D. Wiggins and or Mike Harley, because you could scheme that or what or something up for Jeremiah Payton instead of those guys. But the clear push at wide receiver has been for 3, 6, and 8, and they're scheming things up. They're dialing things up. They're trying to get those guys going. And to do that, it comes at the expense of someone else. It's the same thing that I talk about in recruiting. You want every single player in South Florida to be in the recruiting class. At some point, you have to make a judgment and say, this guy is the guy we're going to go after, and this guy is a guy we're not. And so you're taking that opportunity or whatever away from the other one. Same thing with Jeremiah Payton. He's not the focal point of the offense. He's not one of the top 3 guys that they're scheming something up for. And so his opportunities are very limited. And unfortunately, today he wasn't able to do anything with any of them.
Yeah, I mean, because the quote from Rob Likens in fall camp where he said that Jeremiah Payton was, you know, one of the most gifted players he's ever coached, it just rings in my head because I'm still, you know, looking for that production. But let's move to the defense. Gave up 22 yards rushing, so that is obviously a big upgrade for us. Pass defense was a little shaky at times, but, you know, we did the job, only gave up 1 touchdown. We were put in some bad situations, committed some stupid-ass penalties.
Wait. When were we put in bad situations?
Well, I mean, like when De'Aaron King threw interceptions, those two, for sure.
Okay.
And I guess beyond that, it was self-inflicted.
So those are 2 drives then.
Yeah.
Put in bad situation.
Yeah. So the other drives were self-inflicted because of penalties and, you know, missed tackles. I was leaning more towards the two interceptions.
Let's think about this too. How many, off the top of your head, because I'm looking at the answer, so I have it. How many drives did Pittsburgh have today?
Ooh, 4?
How many
5?
Times did they have the ball?
I don't know. Tell us the answer.
They had the ball 14 times. So 1 out of every 7, 14.2% of the time, we were put in a bad situation because of the offense. That's not enough to really affect things, in my personal estimation.
That's a good point.
You're in a good or decent situation. I don't know, bro.
Okay, let's get your initial thoughts about the defense today. What you like, what you didn't like. Quincy Roche obviously had a big game. And then Jay, you can talk about the defense a little bit.
Yeah. I've been talking a lot. Let's cue it up to Jay.
All right. What'd you think?
Answers. Go ahead. You started off.
No, I just want to give that one statistical answer. Go ahead, fam.
Okay. My thoughts initially after the game, I think that it's another situation where I see where we are. Like, I'm tough on people, especially on the defensive end. So right now, I feel like we got 2 good ends. We got some plays every now and then from the inside, and Bubba Bolden is the defense, bro. That's we're talking straight feelings, not facts, not stats, nothing. Bubba Bolden is the defense right now, and I'm glad he's on the team.
Oh, yeah.
I don't feel like nothing is sure, including Baker. And that's the thing I was thinking about after the game. I miss Manny Diaz being our defensive coordinator so bad, because there's certain things that, whether you're an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator, there's certain things that you do when you really got a feel for the game that you can't teach. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like Manny's had that. And I feel like Baker doesn't, bro. I'll be watching these blitzes sometimes, and I'll be like, I don't know if it's a bad call or what, but like it's just not. It was pointless. You know what I mean? Like I get that feeling so many times. It's like you just called something, and I don't trust his whatever the word is, a niche or something, whatever the word is for having the flow of the game and doing things to where you say that was a great call for that specific timing and it worked for that reason. You know what I mean? I just don't see that. So because I don't see that, I feel like this is what we're gonna get. We're gonna have the bend don't break type thing and just hope that we finish drives. But when we don't have it, we're not playing a team who's giving penalties. We're not playing a team who's dropping open passes. It's going to hurt us.
Yeah. We definitely lucked out a lot on defense now that I think about it. I mean, Cam, do you know how many penalties Pitt committed on offense?
Well, it was a lot. Let's go look it up, friends.
we lucked out a lot. But
They committed 7, and we accepted 6.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I mean, Pitt definitely shot themselves in the foot with their penalties. Jay, I love what you said about the D-line and Bubba Bold, and other than that, you know, who knows. It was good to see Sam Brooks get in there. Good to see Corey Flagg. I think a lot of people were.
I got to shout out Couch.
I was just about to say him. Just about to say him. Couch broke up a few plays. Kim, I'm going to ask again, who was covering Addison? Was it Ivy or Blaze?
He was moving around. Okay. From what I saw. And again, I was out a little bit, so I wasn't 100% on who was on him, but he was moving around a lot, and they did some things to scheme him open with their concepts, which is really good. But no, shout out to Corey Couch, and shout out to, even if it wasn't everything, like just like Jay said, so maybe Blake Baker isn't doing everything that you would want to see, but he finally did something that pretty much every single Miami Hurricanes fan and journalist, blogger, everybody, all of us have been talking about for 2 years now, and actually longer than that, going back to when Trajan Bandy was here. Put this guy, who is a short, small, shifty corner, put him inside at the slot and let him cook. Because he cannot necessarily be outside with these 6'4 dudes and everything, but put him with the shifty inside receivers, and regardless of what it is, it's a whip route, it's a wheel route, it's an inside fade, it's a mesh route, whatever you're going to run, the whole vocabulary or route tree, put this guy over there and let him play man-to-man against that dude. And you finally saw what Ta'Cory Couch can do in that situation. He balled out of control.
I don't ask for much. That's it.
I don't ask for much. But when I ask skill for set, bro.
It's skill set. That's all I've ever been talking about is skill set. That's what he does. He's a cover dude. I'm glad that he's not scared to hit, but he's never going to be a big hitter, bro. Like, if you're not using that, I don't understand it. He wants to cover, bro. Like, what he literally wants to do. Yeah. Put me. That's what I play. That's what I like playing.
And look, he did come up to make a couple of tackles today, so he showed the level of physicality that he has. But if you're expecting him to be a Bubba Bolden or an Amari Carter or a Gervin Hall in terms of hitting ability, that ain't it. But he's better than all three of them put together in terms of man-to-man coverage. Snap the ball, you get a release, you run your route, and I'm going to be on you like white on rice, stick to you like glue. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be in your jersey all day long. And he was, from sideline to sideline, short, intermediate, deep. It didn't matter. Man's made plays. So why is it taking us so long to get to a point where we did that? And look, we're only playing 3 cornerbacks. Why? I mean, Dunson, he was out there on the punt or the fake punt, which was an amazing, incredible play to break that.
That was big.
What? You know, that was huge.
I was expecting a fake, too. I don't know. I wasn't expecting on that specific one, but I knew one was coming, bro. I just had that gut feeling.
But, I mean, it's the same thing like I was talking about with, you know, when I did the question and answer with the Florida State guys before that game. These teams know that Miami has more talent than them. So at some point, pretty much every team, except for Clemson, because Clemson's Clemson. So that's the outlier. We're not talking about them. But every other team on the schedule, and like North Carolina is pretty decent. So, okay, maybe not them either. Every other team that we're going to play, they're looking for an opportunity to do something special, to pull out a trick play, to go with the fake, because they know that they got to steal those inches. They got to make this play out of nothing when they have an advantageous opportunity to do so, because lining up and going just straight against Miami offense and defense all game long for these teams that are inferior in terms of talent, it's not going to go well for them.
Yeah, yeah, and just quick stat: Corey Couch had 3 pass deflections today, so he was playing pretty good. He was a guy that I wasn't sold on coming into the year, just because when I saw him last, because it all goes back to last fall camp, and I should have put this thought away a long time ago, but he was like the smallest dude I've ever seen on a football field.
Should have listened to me, bro. That's what you should have did.
He is, but. This is the inverse of what Jay said so well about the wide receivers. If you miscast him and put him in a position that does not suit his build, athleticism, and skill set, then it's going to be a problem. If you put him out there as cornerback 1, so he's going to match up against your Amon Richards, your George Pickens, your Judy, your Amari Carter or Amari Cooper. You know, when you're going to put him against everybody's All-American wide receiver and say, hey, shadow this guy all across the field and cover him. That might not could go well for him. You know what I mean? He's going to make some plays and everything, but over the course of time, the height difference and honestly, I mean, he's quick, but not too fast. That's probably going to play into things as well. But if you take what you have with Ta'Cory Couch and you put him where he can be successful like they did today, you're going to get performances like this because you're putting him in a situation to be successful.
Bingo.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, that's perfect. I feel like that perfectly explains a lot of the downfall for the Canes the last few years, just misplacing players and putting them in positions where they can't succeed. And,
I'm putting Carter in that same category. I'm gonna go there real quick.
Yeah, go there. Let's hear it, man. This is the reaction show.
They created a position for him and didn't put him there, bro. That's where he's supposed to be at. He's not a free safety, bro.
Okay, wait.
Helping us get a target every game, being on the bench.
Let me ask you this.
What's up?
Straight up. Would you put him at striker and play him over Frierson and or Keontre Smith? Because for me, no.
No, I wouldn't. But I think Jay does have a point.
Based on their progression?
Based on their progression and based on where they are. Look, I know we lost to Clemson, but did you not see that Gilbert Frierson was the second best defender on the field behind Bubba Bolden?
Oh, I definitely saw that. I've been on the Gil wave for a minute now. I don't know why he got as much hate as he did.
Right. But well, for me, I mean, just because he played cornerback his senior year in high school instead of free safety, which I thought was his better position. And some people started hating him because of that. He wears goals and he went to Gables High, so they think that he's a thug or whatever. So I mean, there's still people in our fan base who think that way. So whatever. But my point is, he's so good at this position and has 2 more years to play it. And then you have Smith, who's almost as good, and then he has time behind or to play that as well. I don't see a spot, even at a position that quote unquote is perfect for Amari Carter. I don't see a seat for him. Because that seat's taken.
I'm talking about when it was first created. Right now, I'm a big fan of Gil. Like I don't talk about him as much, but I've been a big fan of him because I never understood where the hate was coming from. I felt like it really all came from one play against Florida. And people just decided he sucked. Because people don't know.
It wasn't even Gil's fault on that play, by the way.
It wasn't even his fault. Whose fault was it?
Cam. All
right, that's my point. So the only reason why I'm not putting Carter there, I'm not including the progression that him and Keontra made, because they both doing their thing right now. The only reason why I'm not putting him there is because of depth at the position. Outside of that, that's where he fits best to me, bro. Like, he's a physical player. I don't care what his numbers for pound say. When they first created the position, before we had it solidified, I felt like that was his best position. Just as where his skill sets be used. Because he's still a liability in pass coverage, and he's still making the same play every game he's made when he does get an opportunity.
That striker position has such a heavy coverage responsibility. That's why, what's his name? Ultra Perm. Romeo Finley. That's why he was so good at it, because he had the physicality to be in the box, but also any of those times with the slot receiver or tight end, when he had to flip his hips and get vertical, he was making plays. So,
I said something just got to give, bro.
Right, but
I feel like it's a waste.
But that's what I'm saying. So if you're not going to beat out Ultra Perm in the past, because you're not, and you're not going to beat out Gil or 3 or 4 right now, you're a man without a country.
Mm-hmm. Well, he could be a man without a country. I don't see that he's in front of Bubba and Gerv though. I just feel like if I'm looking even next level, bro, I don't trust him back there. I don't feel like that's where his best position is. Just talking strictly Amari, not even the team.
Yeah,
I don't feel like his best position is back there.
I mean, maybe he'll be like Thomas Davis coming out of Georgia,
yes,
where he played safety / a little bit striker, buck, whatever you want to call it, and then got to the NFL, and they're like, yeah, no, you're just going to play weak side backer. We're going to put another 20 pounds on you and let you be athletic at this level. Maybe that's
and
his thing.
I'm only saying striker because I wouldn't – when we had the two linebackers we had last year, and now I feel like we're starting to get a little bit more answers at least. Plus, there's more bodies. I wouldn't put him at linebacker where he's at right now. But striker for me is just up in the box. Like, if I'm using him there, I'm probably doing a lot of blitzing and stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Amari is definitely good in pass rushing system. Okay. Yeah,
just him out there free. No, bro, that's not his skill set at all. Okay. I feel like I don't see the practices. Somebody tell me if somebody says that he's not getting cooked every day 1-on-1, I would think they were lying. Okay. I don't see it, bro. Like not in coverage. I just don't like anything pass related. The best you're gonna do is light somebody up. And I was listening to Storm Surge. For the first time, and Ricky made a point, bro. Like every time he lights somebody up, they get up, bro. So it's not your hits ain't even doing nothing. All these big hits aren't doing anything.
It's a good point.
So it's literally a waste of a play.
Nah, that's a real good point, though.
Damn. Shouts
out to Ricky. I'm giving him that.
Shout out Ricky. All right, shout out Ricky on that. Okay, I wanted to ask you guys just one more question on the defense. Before we start to wrap up, Jay, you've been on the show like a few times over the past few weeks.
Yeah.
So Cam, I wanted to get your thoughts on the linebackers. They're slow and they played well today. But I want to see Sam Brooks in the starting lineup. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, the linebackers that we're starting are slow.
Yes.
Not all of the linebackers on the roster. So, you know, I know that Manny Diaz tried to cut everybody off at the pass this week after Sam Brooks came in and made a couple really nice plays against Clemson. And everybody's like, if he's doing that against Clemson, why in the world are we not seeing him? He's like, he was the foot injury. Yeah, the foot injury was the thing. I'm like, okay, does he still have the foot injury? Because if he does not... I also remember that his first start was in the bowl game when he had 12 tackles, 2 tackles for a loss, and a sack, and a PBU. So it's time that we go and we do that. And, I mean, hey, Bradley Jennings Jr. is a scholarship player here. He can find a role as a substitute on the defense. He can find a role on special teams and things. But he's been a literal negative when he's on the field in terms of base defense.
Yeah.
Why do we keep putting him out there? Zach McLeod, I might have incorrectly, when he was a recruit, said that he was going to be a first-round draft pick in 4 years. but he had at that time the size, athleticism, and instincts, and I don't think that he's necessarily gotten a lot better in his time here. He's, you know, a decent rotation guy and whatnot. But, I mean, yeah, I said it at the beginning of the year. The thing that we should be leveraging at linebacker is the immensely increased athleticism. So that means Sam Brooks. That means Avery Huff. I mean, we're obviously seeing Corey Flagg and then a little bit of Tyreek Austin Cave. All of those guys are more athletic than 44 and 53. So if, again, that's the strength of the position, why are we not playing to that strength? It is mind-boggling and baffling to me. So, yes, I want to see Sam Brooks out there more. Yes, I want to see Corey Flagg out there more, and he got a lot of run today, number 11 on defense. He's playing really well. And if I don't see Avery Huff out there in somebody's position for some kind of snaps that mean something soon, I'm going to get real angry.
I'm already real angry.
I mean, no, but the thing about it is, like, you have – a guy who's 6'3", 210, and runs a 4.5 at linebacker. Play him. figure it out. If you change the defense to create this striker position, right? So you can find a way to get your best defenders, which is what it was billed as, right? You're getting your best defenders on the field so that they can be successful. You're telling me that you got Avery Huff from St. Thomas Aquinas, who I've seen do incredible things on the field, that everybody's seen do incredible things on the field, and the only reason he redshirted last year was because of academic reasons, and you have him cooling on ice, handing out water cups on the sideline? What are you doing, Blake Baker?
I want to make a comment on the linebacker thing, and this may be a cop out, but there's a certain time when seniority has to take a back seat when it comes to starters. We saw it last year with Patchen, and I think we're seeing it a little bit this year with Zach McLeod. Jay, would you agree?
I'm past it. I mean, I get it, bro. Like, especially with McLeod. McLeod is getting He's getting role model PT right now, bro. That's what I call him. He's a great person, bro. He's an absolutely cool for years. He's a great person. And he has the most experience. Here's my thing, bro. We already rotate anyway, right? Every position, we rotate, so everybody's going to play. If you're going to start them, cool. This is all I want to see. This is across the board. Receivers, linebackers, everything. We come into every year with question marks. It's college football, a lot of new people. When you start to get an answer, bro, play that man until he proves you wrong. So when we're talking about somebody like Brooks, he's showing you some answers, bro. So he should be getting the most time right now. I don't care if he starts or not. I don't care what the rotation is. When you start getting answers, those guys need to be playing more. We did that with Rousseau last year. I'm glad. But, like, that needs to be more consistent of me not finding out the answers before the coaching staff does.
Mm-hmm.
Baker, whoever's making those decisions. But I'm seeing too many question marks, and I'm using Pope for this example. Pope, because he hasn't done it in the game, was a question mark. Y'all decided he was an answer. He was a question mark. Jay Williams last year, they decided he was an answer at quarterback. He was a question mark. So they're calling question mark answers, and when we start seeing answers, they're still treating them like question marks. That's what's bothering me. Damn. When we start to see an answer, start rotating that guy in more to see if that's really an answer. And if he proves it, keep him on the field, then give him the starting job. But it's just too much of this equal opportunity, seniority type thing to where – y'all are treating people who haven't really done it yet. And I still feel like McLeod, he was third in that group, bro. You still haven't proven to be a starter yet.
Dude, you sound like Jordan. You sound like Jordan right now. That's the point he always makes. Like, if because we had – and this goes back to a point that you made when you're talking about that McLeod could be a first-round pick, Cam. We had an NFL draft guy on probably like in April or whatever. He said that he expected McLeod to go higher than – Quarterman and Pinckney, who obviously wasn't drafted, but he expected McLeod to be like a second, third round guy. So I came into the season with high expectations for 53, but I'm just not seeing it. And honestly, let me just make one more point. But at this point, just put the person who's producing. I mean, this is football, and it pisses me off that we're saying this kind of year after year.
Yeah, and I hear you. And, I mean, I said that 5 years ago. I didn't say it in no April, you know, or no January. You know what I mean? I said this calendar year, you know, like, yeah. I mean, give me some credit for that. I mean, when he was a recruit, okay, you know, I was extrapolating off of what I saw when he was at, you know, Santa Lucia's high school.
We all do that, bro. She's supposed to do as a fan anyway.
Right. No, but honestly, like, he was the highest rated of those guys. I went up there and I saw him play in a couple games. You know, I saw him at some recruiting events. Like, I'm going off of what I saw in person, on film, size, height, skill set. I'm looking at a whole bunch of different things. You know what I mean? Saying that 5 years ago is one thing. You got somebody on the podcast this calendar year and said that?
Yeah.
No, sir.
That's Marsh.
Yeah, it wasn't me. Trust me, it wasn't me.
You had high hopes, don't lie.
I did have high hopes. I mean, when
you know what I'm saying, but that's just thought you and everybody.
And well, and like the fact that he was coming back for a fifth year, I think it kind of blinded me to, you know, the last few years of him playing, and I just kind of thought, oh, it's his fifth year, he's gonna do so well. I thought the same thing about Patchen last season. So I've been caught in that mindset a few times. Last few questions. Sorry, what?
I was just going to say, also for Patchen, he was injured forever and, you know, true. He flashed a couple plays when he was healthy, and you thought, okay, maybe this is going to be it. And then you just had, you know, that freak of nature, number 15, Gregory mm-hmm. Rousseau, and, you know, nothing was the same.
Yeah, it was definitely more a testament to Rousseau breaking out than Patchen not doing enough. But so last few questions. Jordan was on the Fours Up Twitter today, and I think it was when we were struggling in the third quarter or second quarter. He said something along the lines of brace yourselves for 7-4. And I'm a pessimistic Canes fan. I'm, you know, still nervous because that's what I've had the last 15 years is just kind of pitiful football play. But I, even after today, I think we can still win 8-9 games this season. Jay first and then Cam, 7-4. Are you buying that or is that an over exaggeration?
He had good reason for it.
Yes, he did.
I don't think it's gonna happen though. I still feel like everything that I predicted, I'm still standing on all of that. I said last time I was on here, I don't think that this is a team that's gonna get upset. Now, this is when King was playing better, offense clicking a little bit more, but I still see the same thing, to where I don't see four teams that are better than us, and I think that I trust us to just win the game. Now, the hype we had before Clemson, I'm hoping they just deflated us a little bit. We can get that air back. You know, we're just clicking a little bit more. But I feel like until we see North Carolina, I'm not even tripping.
Well, don't sleep on Virginia Tech either. Or at NC State. I'm scared about that game. I'll be completely honest.
All I'm talking about is a W. You know, I ain't predicting no blowouts against nobody. I don't know how we're going to look. Our offense ain't looking the same right now for whatever reasons. Defense still what they are. All I'm talking about is a win. I'm confident that we will win these games.
All right. Cam, you predicted.
And I'm not sweating until North Carolina.
Cam, you predicted 7-4, correct?
I did.
Okay. I don't know why that reaction was just so funny. Are you
ask a question, get an answer.
It was just so somber. What do you think we're better than a 7-4 team right now, or are we right on track for that prediction?
I'm going to quote myself from the State of the U website, our State of the U 2020 season predictions, published on September the 7th at 4 p.m. And I quote me. If you've been following me or reading State of the U for any length of time, you'll know I've been among the most vocal and optimistic people regarding Miami that you'll find. The Canes have more talent than any team in the ACC not named Clemson, but they've routinely underachieved, done less with more than any team in the country over the last 15 years. And that includes many, many losses to teams that they had no business losing to. Y'all know the list, and I'm not going to go through it, but that's why I'm not optimistic this year. There are reasons to believe that things will finally be different, that Miami will finally play to the level of their talent and stop losing stupid games to inferior teams they have no business losing to, but the Canes are going to have to prove it before I believe it or predict it. 7-4, prove me wrong. End quote.
Okay. Month and a half later, is that...
I mean, I read it. No, same. Like, huh? Okay. You passed two tests. The Louisville game and today. Those are encouraging because in the past, even last year, the year before, we probably lose one, if not both of those games. So that's something good. But I'm still not sold. You know, I still think that there are deficiencies in the passing game. I still think that there are issues just with the bend don't break nature of the defense, because like, you know, sometimes like what happens if the defense breaks, you know, what happens if you don't make that one last play to hold, who do we play today? Jesus Christ.
Pittsburgh.
Right. What if we don't hold them to field goals on one or two or three of those drives? That's a loss, you know? So am I pleased with the fact that there's effort and everything? Yes. But I still need more proof that this is a 9 or 10 win team this season before I fully believe it.
Yeah, I after the Louisville game or after the FSU game, I said going into the season, I said 8-3. And then after the FSU game, I said, there's no reason this team can't finish 10-1. I don't know. I there's still no reason we shouldn't be able to do that, but games against Vatek really scare me. UNC is going to be very tough with the way they're playing. And kind of like you, Cam, I just need to see a little bit more. And it's awesome that they're, you know, the effort is there, but that shouldn't have to be on the wish list.
Right, but it's also, I mean, we're 4-1 so far.
Exactly.
So that's positive, you know, but we've been with four and one records or better records, and then things have fallen apart. You know, like Derek King completed 50% of his passes today. That is something that maybe could come back to haunt you. You know, he threw, yes, the four touchdowns, but he also threw two pretty bad interceptions. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is he's still going to be 5'9 next week. So you're going to coach your defensive line that if you can't get there, get your hands up and tip some passes. And Pittsburgh tipped like seven of them. One of them got picked. Another one could have got picked. And then, you know, you had the second one that did. So, like, yes, Miami's a good team. Yes, Miami's a talented team. But I'm not 100% sure that the record at the end of the year is going to be to the level that we want. And again, I hope that they prove me wrong, but I, for one, am not going to set my sights on this super high win total from a team that's been so volatile and so inconsistent over these last 15 years. There's like a small step is still a step, but we still have many more steps forward to go before I'll 100% believe them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, you're completely right. And I think that that's definitely how I feel as well. So Jay is confident as hell right now. He's just going forward.
No, wrong. Can you still hear me? I'm in the car right now. Hopefully I don't get bad.
No, you
if
good.
You get bad, cut me off. Look, this is what I think to what Cam said. Are we talking about a record or are we talking about being a better team? Because we can pull out 10-1. Malik Rozier did that, bro. We pulled out a good record with not that good of a team before. I believe that we can do that. I think the team still needs work. The program is still going in a direction that we haven't achieved yet, clearly.
Yeah.
But just the record, I think we can do that, bud.
All right. I think that's fair. Yeah. Okay. All right. All right, boys. Okay, next week against Virginia, last question. Confident we can get a big dub or not? It wouldn't be a big dub, but
– Every dub is a big dub.
Yes, sir. I haven't really watched any Virginia. I just hate Bronco Mendenhall, so it's always personal for me when we play them. Are they good?
Oh, why? Because he coached at BYU?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
and he just wasn't very nice when I met him, honestly. Are they good this year?
They're 1-2 and tied at 20 in the second quarter against Wake Forest, who's also 1-2. So,
okay.
I mean, maybe average. They did some numbers against Clemson. You know, a week mm-hmm. or two before we played them, you know, but they're them.
Yeah. I feel like UVA is usually like a tough game, you know, where it's still in jeopardy in the third quarter, but next week it let's just come out and beat the hell out of them. But boys, I thank you guys so, so much for this. This was awesome. You guys are two of my favorite people to talk with. We got to do this again. All right.
Hey, this is legit, bro.
Damn, yeah, I mean
the real professional take. So I'm always down for that.
All right.
Nah, Jay got to stop tweeting about LeBron for a second to hop back on the microphone. I'm just saying for a second on the microphone. Like, I don't want you doing that while you're driving and talking Canes, man. Like, you know, just put it down for a minute. That's all I'm saying.
It's worth it,
bro. How do you have the energy? How do you and AR have the energy?
And I get off a good fire LeBron tweet, bro. Like, I lived a good life, bro. If I get in a wreck for that. Hey, God got me, bro.
I honestly don't know how you and 82 have the energy to go at it like every day about the same thing.
But I'm built for this. That's why.
Just stupid, yo.
I do this.
Okay.
I tweeted about him tweeting about that one time, and this man tweeted me seven responses back to back to back to back to back, and I was like, just the one tweet, like, dang. I mean, like, yo, like. You know, whatever. I mean, clearly, just because I don't go back and forth on the timeline, you saw that I roasted Richard. So, like, I mean, I can do it. But, I mean, dang, I just said one thing. This man just... So, yeah.
It's
because
I be at work, bro. My job has a lot of downtime. That's why I'm on Twitter. Once I go home, I don't even get on the app barely. But I be having time, bro. I be having a lot of time to talk.
Okay. You're built for this,
AR,
man.
I'm going to get this work.
Shout out to AR.
Shout out. Okay. All right, boys. Anything else?
One more shout out I'm giving to Manny again. Actually, I got two. All
right.
Manny, I appreciate Manny. The difference between Manny and every other coach. Number one, he thinks like me. He's always trying to fix something. You know what I'm saying? But what I appreciate about Manny is there is zero stubbornness, bro. Everything we've been saying, he's been seeing. I don't know if it's coming from us, but he's making those changes. He's at least exploring it. And I have to give him credit for that because we're seeing the just the openness to look at something else. Second thing I got to give credit to is Feely Fields. What's the strength and conditioning coach name?
David Feely.
Feely. I feel like he is very underrated in how far we've come just in being able to compete with these other teams on a physical level. Because I didn't realize how far we were behind, bro. And he's catching up a lot of people, but even in a game like Clemson, I'm still mad that we didn't show up for that game.
Yeah.
But because of where we are on a physical standpoint, I think it's still going to be Miami against Miami for the rest of the season until we see UNC. If we show up, we'll take care of business, and a lot of that has to do with just our physical ability to do that. So shout out to both of them.
All right. Okay. And a happy early birthday to you, Jay. Cam, any last thoughts?
Nah, man. You know, happy to get this win. Appreciate you having me on, even if it's...
What?
No, I'm just saying, you know, thank you for having me on and everything, and that's it. So if you're listening to the sound of my voice, please go over to stateoftheu.com. We got some great content over there. Marsh writes stuff, I write stuff, other guys write stuff. That's about it.
All right, Cart. Yeah, sorry, you cut out for a sec, but you're good. All right, boys, thank you so much for coming on. Y'all have a blessed day, and to everyone listening, we love you guys. Continue to subscribe and support, and go Canes!
This has been the Forza Podcast. Remember to